Well, we're in the book of Job, and you remember Job? He's that fun, good time guy. Wait a minute, that's not right. He's the guy who lost everything. He lost his family, he lost his wealth, he lost his health, but he didn't lose his relationship with the Lord. Look in Job chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. Job chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. When Job's three friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, heard about all the troubles that had come upon him, they set out from their homes and met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. He said, "May the day of my birth perish, and the night it was said a boy is born. That day, may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about it. May no light shine upon it. May darkness and deep shadow claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm its light. That night, may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor be entered into any of the months. May that night be barren. May no shout of joy be heard in it. May those who curse days curse that day, those who are ready to rouse Leviathan. May its morning stars become dark. May it wait for daylight in vain and not see the first rays of dawn. For it did not shut the doors of the womb on me to hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Why were there knees to receive me and breasts that I might be nursed? For now I would be lying down in peace. I would be asleep and at rest with kings and counselors of the earth who built for themselves places now lying in ruins, with rulers who had gold, who filled their houses with silver. Or why was I not hidden in the ground like a stillborn child, like an infant who never saw the light of day? There the wicked cease from turmoil, and there the weary are at rest. Captives also enjoy their ease. They no longer hear the slave driver's shout. The small and the great are there, and the slave is freed from his master. Why is light given to those in misery, and life to the bitter of soul, to those who long for death that does not come, who search for it more than for hidden treasure, who are filled with gladness and rejoice when they reach the grave? Why is life given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For sighing comes to me instead of food. My groans pour out like water. What I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil." May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. Wow. Miserable. Job says, "I wish I'd never been born." Job says, "I wish I was dead right now." Job says, "I don't understand what's going on, but I want out. I long for the grave. I do not value my life at all." Most of you have not had that experience. But before you die, you may. Isn't that a happy thought? To realize that if you live long enough, you may get to the point where you wish you weren't living. Where you're longing for death. That happens to a lot of people. They get to the point where they really wish that they could just go ahead and die. Job certainly had that experience. And he wanted death so strongly that he wished he'd never been born. He wished it had never started. In other words, he didn't say, well, you know, at least I have my memories of the good times. You know, I'm having a really bad time right now, but I can look back and think about the good things I've experienced, and yeah, it's worth it. No, he's not feeling that way at all. He says, the misery that I'm having right now is so extreme that I wish I'd never been born. The good stuff I've experienced in the past does not outweigh the horrible things I'm going through right now. I believe we could say he was depressed. I think that would be safe. I think this would fit the definition, the parameters. He is miserable. Now, until he says this, his friends who came to comfort him were doing the right thing. They wept with the one who weeps. That's what Jesus says we ought to do. Weep with those who weep. But when they hear this, it pushes them over the edge. They had been silent for 7 days and seven nights. They sat with him and shared his tears and didn't feel that they had anything to say. But man, when Job starts talking like that, they can't just let that go unanswered. They are determined that they are going to answer this. And each of these three fellas speaks up and they begin what comprises most of this book. And that is an ongoing debate with Job. Rebuking him. The comforters are now rebuking him and telling him he's wrong. Stuart Smalley would say, that's stinking thinking, Job. You know about stinking thinking? Not supposed to think that way. Not supposed to feel that way. Have you ever been told you shouldn't feel that way? Still feel that way, don't you? Now, it is important that we learn to take our thoughts captive to the Lordship of Christ and to recognize that even though we may feel something strongly, our feelings do not determine the ultimate reality. They're a part of our reality, but they're not the ultimate gauge by which we're to decide what's true. Let me give you an example.
I feel like nobody loves me.
Okay, so you feel like nobody loves you. But is that true that nobody loves you, or is it just true that you feel like nobody loves you?
Well, I do feel like nobody loves me.
Okay, but can you think of anybody who loves you?
No.
Well, let's try together to say John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, so that whoever believes in him would not perish, but would have everlasting life. Now, are you on the planet? God loves you even when you don't feel like it.
Well, I don't deserve his love.
Oh, it doesn't say, for God so loved the deserving. It says, God so loved the world. This is what's so amazing about God's love is that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So, I may feel like nobody loves me, but I know that I am loved. And it turns out, if I'm really honest, that I'm not just loved by God, I'm actually loved by a number of other people. You love me, don't you? No, it's there really are, though, people who love us. There really are. I was meeting with someone recently who is prone to depression, and one of the things we talked about is the fact that he is loved by a number of folks who actually, honestly, sincerely love him. But whether we feel it or not, God's love is real and true and strong. So, Job expressed the fact that he was depressed, and his friends responded not with encouragement, but with rebuke. In chapter 4, Eliphaz gives kind of a summary statement. He's going to expand on it. He's going to go further with it. But look in chapter 4, verse 7 through 9. This is a summary of Eliphaz's view and argument. Consider now, who being innocent has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed? As I have observed, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. At the breath of God, they are destroyed. At the blast of his anger, they perish. Well, what is he saying? He's saying, if people suffer and die, it's because they earned it. They've got it coming. There's a certain sense in which that's true. We've all sinned. We all deserve to die. But that's really not the full picture, and it's also not helpful at this point. How true is Romans 8:28? Well, it's God's truth. It's the absolute, absolute truth. Did you know there are some times when you ought not to quote Romans 8:28 to people? Somebody's house has just been destroyed by a tornado and half of their family got killed. And so I walk up in the yard and say, hey, just wanted to stop by and remind you that all things work together for the good of those who love God, who are the called according to his purpose. Thought you should know that. Have a nice day. Wrong thing to do. Wrong thing to say. It's true, but it's not appropriate. Not in that moment. Not in that situation. Now, let's suppose my house has just been destroyed by a tornado and that half of my family has died. Would it be good for me to remember that no matter how I feel, Romans 8:28 is true? Absolutely. That's a good thing for me to call to mind and find strength and comfort in. But for me to go and drop that gem on somebody else when it's their house that got destroyed, their family they got torn into, not the right moment. And part of what we see in this book is God's anger, when we get to the end, toward those who thought they were defending him. These three friends of Job, who were lousy friends, lousy comforters, because they couldn't deal with the silence, and they couldn't deal with Job's complaint and his lament and his depression and his misery. It was bringing them down. And so they felt the right thing for them to do was to rise up and defend God. And God does not appreciate the favor. Okay? When we get to the end of the book, you will see God tells them that they better ask Job to pray for them so that he doesn't smite them. Because they did the wrong thing. Now, we read from Eliphaz, who says, who being innocent has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed? Let's look at Bildad, chapter 8. By the way, it's been observed that Bildad is the shortest man. Goliath was the tallest man, but Bildad was the shortest. Do you know why they say that? Because it says he was the shoe height. See, he's tall as a... It's really corny, and you know, but... Anyway, Bildad the Shuhite replied, "How long will you say such things?" That's because people make that joke about his height, see? No, he was... Bildad was actually saying that about Job. "How long will you say such things? Your words are a blustering wind. Does God pervert justice? Does the Almighty pervert what is right? When your children sinned against him, he gave them over to the penalty of their sin. But if you will look to God and plead with the Almighty, if you are pure and upright, even now he will rouse himself on your behalf and restore you to your rightful place. Your beginnings will seem humble. So prosperous will your future be." That's Bildad's argument. He says, okay, your kids died. They deserved it. They just got what they deserved. Now, if you're really innocent, ask God and he'll restore you. We know that. Why? Well, because God always does what's right. Yes, God always does what's right, but he doesn't always do what's right in our eyes. Please get that. You want to... Lesson for today? What's the one thing to write down? Well, there are about 10 of them, but let me just give you this one. God always does what is right, but he doesn't always do what is right in our eyes. We don't always see what God is doing. And what God does do sometimes to us looks like the wrong thing. I would have been like Peter saying to Jesus when he talked about going to the cross, "Surely not, Lord. Surely not, Lord. That's not right. You're the Messiah. You're the King. You're the ruler. You haven't done anything wrong. Why would you be crucified? That's not the way to set up a kingdom. You've got to stop this stinking thinking. Don't talk that way, Jesus." And Jesus would have said to me as he said to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan." The cross didn't seem right in our eyes. Why would Jesus suffer and die? He's the only one in all of human history who never did anything wrong. In our eyes, it may not seem right. But God will always do what is right, but he won't always do what's right in our eyes. Got that? Well, Bildad didn't get that. Bildad said, "Does God pervert justice? Does the Almighty pervert what is right?" It's a rhetorical question. The answer is no. God does not pervert justice. He does not pervert what is right. The problem is Bildad thought he knew what was right. He thought what's right is obvious. We all know what needs to be done. You remember the man who was paralyzed, who was lowered down in front of Jesus when there was such a huge crowd? Anybody could look at that situation and see what needs to be done. The guy needs to be healed, obviously. And instead, Jesus says to him, "Your sins are forgiven." What? That isn't what I came here for. I'm a quadriplegic. I can't take care of myself. I can't earn a living. I've got an enormous, obvious problem. Anybody can look at me and tell what's wrong. My limbs are withered. I've got extreme atrophy. And anybody can see what is needed. The four guys who lowered him down in front of Jesus didn't say, "Could you do something about his sins?" They wanted him healed. Jesus told him his sins were forgiven. And then he got his healing too. as a way of demonstrating who Jesus is and the authority that Jesus has. Jesus said that's why he did it. In order that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins, I say to you, rise up and walk. But you see, what seemed so obvious and so important was really not. Bildad thought that he understood the situation. And notice what he says here. God will rouse himself on your behalf and restore to you your rightful place. Your beginnings will seem humble, so prosperous will your future be. That was prophetic. That's prophetic. And yet God's upset with Bildad, because Bildad thought that if you serve God, you're going to get it right now. That's what he says. God will rouse himself right now. If you're innocent, God will give it to you right now. And that was not true. His sense of what God was able to do was true. But he was wrong about the timing. And as a result, when things didn't go the way he thought they should go, he made false judgments about Job. Pretty clear to us that Job has messed up. He's obviously done wrong, or he wouldn't be in this situation. Just like his kids who got killed obviously were suffering as a result of their own sin. Not true. Were they sinners? Yes. Is that why they suffered death? No. They died because God decided to take them out, but it wasn't that he decided to take them out because of their sin. Well, doesn't God sometimes decide to take people out because of their sin? Yes. Well, so can't we rightly assume that that's what happens when somebody dies? No. But sometimes God does kill people because they've sinned. I mean, you remember about Judah had two sons, Ur and Onan? Remember that? And it says right there in the book that both of them were killed by God because of their sin. Yep. So can't we just conclude from that if somebody's struck down and killed, it's because they sinned? No. Well, we all have sinned, right? Yes. So isn't it safe to say if somebody dies, it's because they sinned? No. We want it all wrapped up in a little bow. We want to have it all figured out so that we can look around and feel safe, because we've got it all in categories. And God keeps coming along and breaking our categories. Do you know what is the main reason that Job was suffering so much? Because he was the most righteous guy on earth. The reason he got singled out for suffering was not because he'd done something bad. It's because he'd done so much good. Job was so righteous compared to everybody else on the planet that God said there's nobody else like him. And the consequence of being singled out as the most righteous guy on the planet is that he's set up for disaster. Now, who would have seen that coming? And I just want to ask, can you sympathize with these friends of Job who are just sure that there's something else going on? Okay. I mean, because there is something wrong with this picture from our standpoint. And so we're going to be smart. We're going to see behind the veil. We know behind the curtain. We know what's going on. Job, what are you not telling us? Come on, man. Fess up. Get honest. No point hiding it. We can all see. We know God is just. God doesn't do anything wrong, so obviously you're the screw up here. You're the one who messed up. We know, we can tell. You can't hide it anymore. Go ahead, tell us the truth. That's what they did. What a comfort. I mean, this guy is wondering, what happened? Job is saying over and over again, I don't get it. I don't know what's going on. I have been careful. I'm not saying I've never sinned, but I've confessed my sins. I've sought forgiveness. I've offered sacrifices. I've sought to do the right thing. I've sought to walk in obedience to God. I've done this. I've done this. I've done this. I've done this. I have avoided these things. I don't get it. I don't understand.
You're sounding pretty self-righteous there to me.
Hey, listen, God spoke more highly of Job than Job did of Job. You understand that? We read some of what Job says about himself and we get a little uncomfortable because we're so reformed that it sounds like he's not, you know, fully aware of his own sinfulness and the depths of his depravity. But that's because we're kind of like Job's friends. We've got our theology all down so straight that we want to be sure nobody ever, ever forgets that apart from him we can do nothing. I mean, I love to tell the story of Dr. Gerstner, who after he preached was approached by a woman at the door of the church. And she said, Dr. Gerstner, I didn't like your message today. You made me feel about this big. And Dr. Gerstner replied, Madam, that is too big. Now, I mean, I like that. I like his sense of humor. I like the fact that he's a reminder to all of us that we deserve God's wrath. But I don't want to be a monotone, because God's music is beautiful. And while on the one hand we deserve God's wrath, that's not the good news. That's the prelude. The good news is that God loved us so much that he sent Jesus to save sinners.
Let us never forget that we deserve to die. Let us never forget that we deserve God's wrath. Let us never forget that we deserve to be in hell.
Okay, don't forget that, but don't focus on that. Jim, Wood, it's true. Confess it. Proclaim it. Now move on to Jesus, who came to save sinners. Jesus, who not only forgives us, but who imputes to us his righteousness, so that God delights in us and rejoices over us with singing.
Well, I don't know that we really ought to think about that too much.
I don't think we could think about that too much.
Well, Bildad the Shuhite was just the second. There's another fella in here. Zophar, the Naamathite. Look at chapter 11. I like Zophar. I mean, Zophar seems to me to be pretty balanced. Look at verse 6. Start in verse 5. Job 11, beginning in verse 5. Oh, how I wish that God would speak, that he would open his lips against you and disclose to you the secrets of wisdom. For true wisdom has two sides. Know this, God has even forgotten some of your sin. See, he thought he was preaching grace. Come over to verse 13. If you devote your heart to him and stretch out your hands to him, if you put away the sin that is in your hand and allow no evil to dwell in your tent, then you will lift up your face without shame. You will stand firm and without fear. You will surely forget your trouble, recalling it only as waters gone by. Life will be brighter than noonday, and darkness will become like morning. You will be secure because there is hope. You will look about you and take your rest in safety. You will lie down with no one to make you afraid, and many will court your favor. But the eyes of the wicked will fail, and escape will elude them. Their hope will become a dying gasp. Not very comforting. He's saying God is willing to overlook and forgive sin. He's forgotten some of your sin, but you need to know this, Job. I wish God would speak up right now, because you need to know this. If you'll turn away from sin, you're going to be fine. That sounds good. If I heard a sermon like that, I'd think, wow, he's really preaching the word. He's bringing it home, calling people to holiness, telling them to turn away from sin, receive the blessing of God. Whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. Right there, it's biblical, it's true, but it's not the whole picture. It's not the whole picture. Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar are rebuked by God, because while they said many things that are true, they were speaking out of turn. They did not understand what God was up to, and they thought they did. And the shame was not that they believed God is righteous. The shame is that they didn't understand that God does things we don't understand. God is never, never in the wrong. But a lot of times, things happen in this world that God intends for good that don't seem good to us at all. And if we are not careful, we will try and come up with our own logical, rational explanation in order to make ourselves feel better. And when we do, we are missing the mystery and the glory of God. So, we're not done with Job yet. Next time, God willing, we're going to look at Job's faith in the midst of this suffering. But for now, I want you to see the three friends who blew it, because they were just sure that God always does what is right, but they forgot that God doesn't always do what is right in our eyes. Is that clear? I hope so. Because it's still true today. And we will go wrong if we insist that God has to do what we think is right.